Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Fourth and final hour. Darren Donick and Chase here on this Monday afternoon. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. Chase McCabe is actually filling in today on the afternoon show with the GM, Floyd Reese. So that's coming up in less than an hour. Following the conclusion of our show. Right now we bring in Nick Suss, Clarion Ledger, covering all things Mississippi. We've talked Ole Miss, we've talked Mississippi State with him in the past, and boy, did the Bulldogs get a lot of attention Saturday night with their big win over LSU. Nick, how you doing?
I am doing well. Thank you all for having me back.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. Look, let me start off with something real quick. I just wanted to see if I could get a little clarification what you're hearing down in your state, because I saw where Mark Stoops today, Kentucky's coach, said the SEC presidents were voting again on being able to transfer within the conference. We went to Knoxville last hour, and we were told Jeremy Pruitt today in his weekly chat with the media said he had heard nothing of the sort. So what are you hearing in Mississippi about what the SEC presidents may or may not be doing?
Well, lucky for you, I just typed out Lane Kiffin's exact quote about this, so I can read it to you word for word.
Great.
I did not know that was public, Kiffin said. That's why in the previous question I said we were supposed to hear more today, but yeah, I guess that's about that. I was told the vote I believe was happening today. I think we're supposed to find out. That would obviously change things. I don't think there should be an SEC rule. That's not for my guy, Otis Reese. That's just in general. You have the rule in place that you have to sit, but if you win an NCAA waiver for things, I don't know why you wouldn't just have to go over an SEC hurdle too. It doesn't make sense to me. I obviously know why it was. People didn't want people transferring within the conference, but that's not what it's supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about the student athlete. There are circumstances that a kid wins an NCAA waiver. The SEC, in my opinion, shouldn't be blocking that. I just think it's because it was set in stone years ago to block kids. So that's why they're reviewing it. There's obviously people that feel the same way.
Wow. Okay, so that was maybe a Mark Stoops, whoops, maybe he shouldn't have said that? Is that what I gathered from that?
I don't know if Stoops should or should not have, but you give Kiffin the platform to exonerate himself from being the first one who said it, and he's going to talk about it.
So what do you think, what are you hearing would be the vote down in your neck of the woods? How do you think Ole Miss and Mississippi State would feel about that? How do you think their presidents would vote?
I would assume Ole Miss for sure would try to get the rule changed, because they've been fighting an uphill battle for going on 10 months now, trying to get Otis Reese eligible from Georgia. And there was a lot of talk about that last week, because Otis Reese put out a statement saying that Kirby Smart pretty much guaranteed him, if he finished out the year last year, he'd be given a unblocked release to transfer anywhere he wanted. And then he heard that block was contested by Georgia, and there's a lot of he said going on with the situation. I can't speak for what Mark Keenum, the president of Mississippi State, would do, but I would be very surprised if the Ole Miss presidents and athletic directors didn't come out and say, hey, we're going to try and allow kids to transfer if they get the waiver, because A, they want one of their best players to play after they just got torched for 644 passing yards and the starting safety that would have been the best DB in their room wasn't allowed to play. But B, I just think they see it as you shouldn't need two waivers. If you get approved, you get approved.
So if Ole Miss is a yes, we think Tennessee, Auburn, and Kentucky would be yeses. Wouldn't it be fair to say this thing is headed down the path of being overturned and changed to where you can? Is that a fair statement?
That's an assumption you can make. I don't know if I
is it a simple majority too, or has it got to be two thirds, three quarters?
Yeah. Do we know what the vote needs to be for it to be kind of overturned?
I don't know. I mean, I learned about it from Stoops this morning, and what Kiffin said. That's the extent of what I know as well.
Okay. Let's talk about what Mississippi State did at LSU. KJ, just start with KJ Costello. We were kind of laughing earlier in the show. Do we think Stanford maybe is going to go back to the drawing board and maybe change their offensive philosophy maybe? KJ Costello did not look like that in the Pac-12.
No, I mean, just living where I live, being down here in Mississippi, if you had told me that last week would start with Deion Sanders getting hired at Jackson State, and that would be the second most unbelievable thing our Mississippi football team did. It was a hell of a week for teams in Mississippi. I mean, not just Deion, not just Ole Miss, but I mean, Mississippi State, that was one of the best games that you've seen an offense play, especially a passing offense, and the way they used the pass and said, we don't need a running game. We have a running back. He's going to go for over 100 yards through the air, too. We're going to use our best athletes, and we're going to exploit an LSU defense that's kind of on skates trying to replace eight guys who might be playing on Sundays right now. It was a hell of a game. I think Mike Leach, you can't accuse him of surprising anybody. He did exactly what everybody thought he would do, and it worked. I mean, it's not like he came out and he'd run the triple option in the past, and now suddenly he's doing this. His last four quarterbacks, three quarterbacks, were all grad transfers. He did it with Gardner Minshew. He did it last year with the kid whose name I'm blanking on at the moment, and now he's doing it with KJ Costello. He knows how to build an offense around a quarterback he's never worked with before, and those quarterbacks put up just bonkers numbers.
Yeah, I guess it's pretty good to have Kylan Hill back in the fold, huh, for the Bulldogs as well?
Yeah. Yeah,
no,
he's
good.
A special running back.
He's pretty good.
I felt concerned when I voted him, like, preseason first team All-SEC. I'm like, a Mike Leach running back? What am I doing here? And then you see the first game, you're like, oh, yeah, no, he's going to touch the ball a bunch. He's still their best athlete on offense. And they have some other guys that looked really good. Some of those receivers on the outside looked like animals. And I know LSU was missing Derek Stingley Jr., and I know that Elias Ricks was a true freshman playing in his first game, and they had some other guys that just weren't the guys that they had last year in the secondary. But, I mean, it's no excuse. You're LSU. You've always reloaded at DB, and you're not supposed to let a team that I think threw for more than 250 yards once last year, you're not supposed to let that team go for 600-plus.
Talking to Nick Suss, and boy, it was just so amazing to watch that game. And Nick covers the scene down there at the Clarion Ledger. And so, Nick, it seemed like it was really interesting to hear Gary Danielson's perspective as it was unfolding, and because he got into a lot of the philosophy of the Mike Leach offense, and it was as advertised. It was, when it's working well, this is what it looks like. They obviously didn't win every game at Washington State, but they showed. The ability to be kind of a giant killer. So did you in any way see this coming at all?
No. If I'm being honest, if you look at Mike Leach's history, he's really never had great teams year one. The thing that surprised me was how quickly it's worked. Because I think his first year at Washington State, he won three or four games. It took two or three years at Texas Tech before they went from being middle of the pack in the Big 12 to being an actual contender in the Big 12. It's never clicked immediately before, unless you count his year as a coordinator at Kentucky or Oklahoma. I thought it was going to take a little while, and I thought teams early in the season would be able to take advantage of the number of turnovers and just the mistakes the teams are going to make trying to play that fast and that wide open. And obviously they made mistakes. I think KJ Costello turned the ball over four times. It just didn't matter. They were so effective with these big plays and with finding holes in the zones and beating one-to-one matchups, because LSU loves to play man coverage, and they were just winning these man battles. I just think it was not a surprise to see the offense work. But it was a surprise to see the offense work on the road week one against LSU of all teams.
Nick, one thing that Danielson said, and I started taking it further in my mind, he was saying the Mike Leach offense is, you know, we try to find the open grass, right, or something to that effect. You know, they're trying to fill the grass. We run our guys to the open grass. And one thing Danielson was stressing was LSU was playing the man coverage. And so they just found the matchups, and Costello obviously was on fire. He put a lot of really nice touch passes in there, but he hit guys in stride, and they just ran wild. It never seemed like LSU changed the defense. Is that what it looked like to you? Like, I was thinking somewhere in here, try a zone, but I'm wondering how often they practiced it. Maybe they didn't have comfort in doing something they hadn't practiced very much, but wow, did they ever get burned, and it never changed.
If I'm being honest with you here, I didn't get to see the first half of that game because I was covering the Ole Miss game, and they kind of overlapped. So I can't tell you the full scope of the game. But from what I saw in the second half when I finished work from the Ole Miss side and started watching what State was doing, LSU's got a first-year coordinator, and they've got 8 or 9 new starters on defense. I know Bo Pelini's a really experienced guy, and he's put together some great defenses in the past, and I think LSU's going to be able to bounce back as soon as this talent starts to play together more. But I don't know if it was a circumstance where Mississippi State was just beating them one-on-one, whatever LSU tried to do, or if LSU was being bullheaded and saying, we have the talent to stop it, let's just do what we know worked last year. I don't know which one was the case, because I wasn't down in Baton Rouge getting to see from the sky view, but from what I saw watching CBS like the rest of y'all, it just looked like this was a LSU team that the offense wasn't clicking the way it did last year when it had maybe the best offense in history, and the defense just didn't have answers to stop a team that didn't care if it ran the ball.
Okay, so leave us with your impressions of Florida and Ole Miss. I mean, obviously the Rebels were able to put points on the board, but they could not slow down Florida's offense.
Yeah, it's a funny coincidence right now that Mississippi State leads the NCAA in passing yards per game and Ole Miss leads the NCAA in passing yards per attempt. Whether you believe in efficiency or raw data, those are arguably the two best passing offenses in the country right now, and Ole Miss has looked great. Elijah Moore, I think, had 227 receiving yards or something. He was 6 yards short of A.J. Brown's school record for a single game. Matt Corral was hitting his spots, and if you factor out sacks, he also ran for 81 yards on pure scrambles. He didn't even have a designed run call. The offense looked great, but this is an Ole Miss team that was worst in the SEC last year when it came to allowing passing yardage per game, and they came out and Kyle Trask threw for 400 and something yards and threw 4 touchdowns to Kyle Pitts alone, 6 touchdowns in total. It's a secondary that needs a lot of work, but I don't think they're going to play many other teams that have an athlete like Kyle Pitts or have a quarterback like Kyle Trask. So we'll see if Ole Miss's offense can bail the defense out, as has been the case really since the end of the Hugh Freeze era with these electric offenses and just nobody defenses.
Yeah, good point. Good to talk to you as always. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you down the road.
I'm happy to do it, y'all.
All right, Nick Suss, Clarion Ledger, covering Ole Miss and Mississippi State. He does a really good job down there, all over the scene down there for the Clarion Ledger. We'll come back more on the other side. We'll get back to the Titans, really. Also get back to you wanting to weigh in. We've had a lot of reaction today, and we're more than happy to talk to you again on our phone lines or text lines. Whatever you saw over the weekend that got your attention, you can talk to us, 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Of course, that is our phone line and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. More of Darren Dunnick and Chase next.
The close wins that you guys seem to pile up, how much does that galvanize your team and give value for later on in the season where they're going to be close, especially in the postseason?
Well, they're going to be, you know, a lot of them are close every week. And we would love to sit here and play blowouts and win them, but that's not the reality of it. You know, this is that Vikings are a good football team coming in here where they won 70% of their games at home. We knew that it was going to be a difficult challenge, but I do think it ends up giving you confidence. It's not something that we want to rely on, but it's something that we want to continue to build on and be excited and appreciative that we're 3-0, that we found ways to win as opposed to finding ways to lose.
Some of Mike Vrabel you heard earlier today on the show as he spoke after yesterday's close victory over the Vikings. 3-0, margin of victory, 6 points. But you know what? Atop the division and undefeated on the season. But they'll get another undefeated team on Sunday at Nissan Stadium when the Pittsburgh Steelers come to town. Don't forget, on Saturday, November 14th, you can support Stars by running, walking, or in this case it says boogieing. For the Nashville Striders, 20th annual Shelby Bottoms Boogie 15K and 5K run/walk. This event is perfect for the avid runner as well as the casual jogger. I'm not even sure I'm a casual jogger. It's on the certified course in the heart of Shelby Bottoms Park. You can also show your support and participate virtually. It is up to you. That's again Saturday, November 14th. Nashville Striders, Shelby Bottoms Boogie to benefit Stars. For more information, visit starsnashville.org. That is starsnashville.org or just IE see Willie Donick.
That's right. I have my Stars shirt on right now. I will be partaking.
I didn't even know that. How about that?
In the Shelby Bottoms boogie. I will be on it. I have participated before, and I will so again. It's a lot of fun. Great cause, of course. Full disclosure, as many people know, that's my wife, Erin, is instrumental in what goes on over at Stars, so that's a big event for them. So if you love to run, if you love to walk, if you love to go to Shelby Park, all three would be reasons to jump on in.
I don't love to run, don't mind walking, don't really love to boogie, but I like to support, so I can
You can
do
it virtually.
Yeah, I can do it virtually. I can support. Not good news coming out of Denver. You know, we really liked Jarrell Casey. Certainly don't root against him. Didn't root for the Broncos, his team, in week one, but certainly root for Jarrell Casey. Does not look good. It looks like he's been injured in their game yesterday, and he may be lost for the season.
I don't think it's a maybe. I think it's...
Is it official? I have not seen officially he's done for the year.
Yeah, I think
he's done for the year. You're right. It's a torn pectoral.
Bicep.
Yeah.
Or pectoral, is that what it is?
I think it's pectoral.
Okay. Wow. I mean, we were talking about strength of schedule. Who have you played? Who have you beaten? Some of it, as you go forward, too, is when do you play them? So now look at the Broncos. They've lost Von Miller. Now they've lost Jarrell Casey. They have a host of other injuries.
Cortland Sutton, their quarterback, Drew Locke. I mean, it goes on and on. That's what I'm saying.
How are they? I mean, their team has been decimated.
People can't get caught up in is if you just can get someone's like, yeah, I know. Everybody feels that way. Like, you have to make do with what you have. It's a crappy situation for coaches. Make do with what you have available. But that's life in the NFL. It just is, especially this season. And, oh, by the way, it may not just be your players, as we just found out. It may be your coaches, too, as we just found out last hour.
That is such a strange story. It's interesting. I'm looking for some additional perspective, you know, on Twitter or anything like that. I haven't really seen much yet because this really just dropped out of the sky. They did a great job of not letting anybody know. I mean, we're talking about national TV, or at least regional coverage, right, on a national network. They had no idea at the game that was going on.
Mm-mm.
Right? That would have been a massive story to know before kickoff. They didn't know.
Yes.
And it happened the day before, and they kept it quiet, even to CBS. And I didn't listen to the radio coverage at all, but I didn't hear anything said on that. I mean, nobody knew until just minutes before the press conference. So
let me ask a silly question.
It obviously didn't affect any players for the game on Sunday. So that gives you some reassurance that this isn't some outbreak beginning with Shane Bowen. Because if that were the case and they knew Shane Bowen couldn't travel and had possibly been around players, that would have been a really troublesome thing. So it makes me think that something happened. Maybe he was around somebody in his family or friends that may have been exposed and it was precautionary, but it sounds like there's so many protocols that go with just one person not going that must be why Mike Vrabel was not able to share or chose not to share any of the other scenarios going forward here.
Let me ask possibly a dumb question, but here goes. If the league is so stringent on injuries, and we know why, it's for betting purposes, right?
Mm-hmm.
You must disclose injuries in the NFL. You cannot hide that stuff. Bad things will happen to you. And certainly teams have been popped for that. Why are you allowed to handle something like this? This is essentially your game day coordinator for the most part, right? For the most part. I wonder why the league doesn't make you, in this case, report that.
Yeah, disclose that.
I mean, if they're so strict about, you don't think, if it's for betting purposes, which we all know it is, you don't think that has an effect on betting? You don't think that affected the game? Say probably it did play a part in it. Now that we've learned this, I'm surprised the league is, and I know there's probably not a rule in place, or they would have done it. They would have. I'm surprised the league. I wonder if they'll get in a room moving forward down the road and change that.
It's something that you probably on a regular Sunday
don't have
even,
to worry about it.
Even on the road, you wouldn't be able to get away with it, right? Somebody who covers the media likely would have been in the press box the day of the game and noticed, hey, Shane Bowen's not here.
Yeah.
Shane Bowen's not here.
Yeah.
But because virtually nobody, was anybody traveling? Did anybody go to Minnesota? I'm guessing
no.
I mean, even a guy like Jim White, was he there?
Oh, I don't know. I remember he told us, I don't think he went to Denver, right?
I forget, but even so, if it's one or two
it's
at the most, as
very
opposed
few.
To
well,
five
Jim Wyatt's
to 10,
irrelevant because he works for the team, so he's not reporting.
He probably wouldn't report it anyway, even if he were. So, yeah, that's a good point. So, on a regular Sunday, it's not likely you could keep that under wraps. But I'm really curious from CBS's standpoint. You know, if I were broadcasting that game, that's a big storyline that I never knew about. If you're CBS, you'd have to say, "Wow, don't we have a right to know that?" I don't know. I'd be disappointed that I didn't know it. I don't know if that's, you know, that there's any ramification because, like you said, I don't think there's a rule that says we have to tell you about everything going on. But that's a pretty important story that plays a part in what happens in the game.
Do you think they get a private hand slap behind the scenes?
I don't know. I have
or
no idea.
Or a strong talking to behind the scenes?
Well, Mike Vrabel said there's 100-plus memos about COVID. I don't know if that is covered in the 100-plus memos, that you have to disclose it or you don't have to disclose it.
It is pretty amazing that, look, I understand it is not easy. You know, there's no manual for what we've gone through in 2020. Nobody has a manual for this, unless they still had one left over from the Spanish flu, and I doubt it. Okay, so nobody has a manual on how to handle a pandemic. But you have to cover so many bases and so many bases that you're not used to covering. I am surprised with however many people they had in a room and however many people had input into all the things they had to do prepare for this season, how that one could really slip by the cracks. Like, I understand what you just said is true. Like, how many times has that happened to a member of the coaching staff? You know, during normal times, I would say hardly ever, right? It doesn't happen very often, but you can't say we're not in normal times. So you have to factor in this right here. How could you not think this could have happened to a coach? And so to not have something in place that says, hey, if one of your coaches or coordinators, whatever, you have to report, you have to let us know, you have to let us know that this has happened, and
maybe it slipped through the cracks, and they just
well. That's what I'm saying. Can you believe that did? I mean, how does that slip through the cracks with how many people had input on the NFL side? You think about how big that machine is. How could that slip through the cracks?
It's interesting. Another thing that I think about is maybe the Titans benefited by. Shane Bowen, number one, is not a guy that the TV cameras have put a lot of camera time on, right? The CBS camera people, you know, I'm sure, because I know this happens. You train your camera people. Who's the head coach? Where's the offensive coordinator? Where's the defensive coordinator? Where's the special teams coach, right? Because if some big play happens and CBS is broadcasting and they say, okay, the special teams made a big play, how many times do you see them pan over to the special team coach, and the color guy goes, hey, here's the special team coach. He's been there for 5 years. He dialed up a great one there. Well, Shane Bowen is not by title the defensive coordinator. So I guess it never came up during the game. But I would have thought somewhere along the broadcast that a James Lofton, who's now done, the last two games, right, for the Titans,
yes,
would have talked about the dynamic between Mike Vrabel and Shane Bowen and how the defensive calls had been made, because that was a story before the game. Then you come to find out that Shane Bowen's not there. So I don't know if you fault CBS for not really figuring it out, but it did help probably that Shane Bowen is a little more anonymous than most defensive coaches.
I'm just saying that I would think CBS behind the scenes may contact the league and say, no, wait a minute. Is there a reason? I mean, that's kind of important. We certainly would have incorporated that into our broadcast. How can we be left in the dark as a partner that pays you billions of dollars? on a subject like that. I wonder if that call will take place behind the scenes.
Isn't it odd, though, that they didn't have, like, the Titans defense was having trouble, right? It is a page out of the manual almost that you pan to the defensive coach in the press box or on the sideline, exasperated, either yelling at somebody or wanting to take that camera that's in the press box and smash it. They never did that during the course of the game. I don't even remember them saying, well, Mike Vrabel's making the defensive calls, and he talked about this during the week, the communication with Shane Bowen. Wait a minute. By the way, where is Shane Bowen? You know, it never came up.
Yeah.
Even on a day that the Titans defense struggled, and it was a story.
That is odd. That is really odd. The more we keep talking about this out loud, the odder it gets.
Yeah, that they were able to keep it completely under wraps until today. Like, even on the post-game radio show. I don't know if – I wonder if the radio team was told, hey, just don't say anything. Mm-hmm. Unless it comes up, we're just not going to say anything. Because that can happen, right?
Sure.
And that's the team's prerogative. But, mm-hmm. like, Mike Vrabel could have said after the game, hey, not to make excuses, but we didn't have Shane today. You know, that – and that we had to adjust. That's part of the story as to – the defensive outcome, right? But they said
yes.
They said nothing.
Yes.
Like they had to know at some point they were going to have to say something unless Shane Bowen were able to just come back to work and when were they going to tell us? Like December. Hey, remember that game against the Vikings? You know Shane wasn't there. He actually wasn't there.
Certainly an odd twist to today's presser, for sure. Certainly an odd twist. Okay, there's a couple news and notes we need to pass along on the Vanderbilt side of things. Let's start with the opponent, and we should have our weekly with Derek Mason tomorrow at 1 o'clock. We do that every Tuesday at 1. But did you see this? The Texas A&M, their defensive back, Clifford Chapman, played limited role. I think he saw a limited time against Vanderbilt. He has decided, he has told Jimbo Fisher, and Jimbo Fisher just announced that today in his weekly press conference, that he has decided to opt out of this season.
Wow. After one game?
One game, yep. Clifford Chapman has decided to opt out of the rest of the season. So that is for the opponent. I said both kind of involve Vanderbilt. That's who Vanderbilt lost a tough one to on Saturday. But on the Vanderbilt side, it looks like it's just being released. I don't know if you've seen this. They are now reversing course. Remember, they were the only SEC school, as we've started SEC play, that was not going to allow fans in the stands. And now they're going to allow a limited number of students to attend the game against LSU.
Okay, so insert your traditional
joke about
the Vanderbilt
students.
This is
in the last 5 to 10 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, well, but insert your joke about the Vanderbilt student section for the last decades, your favorite one, and get ready for the memes and the tweets from Vanderbilt people and you know what I mean? Like the student section has been a sore subject for a long time. So if you decide, if you're a student, you say, I want to go to the game. Do you have to get there before the game starts?
Well, Candace Lee did send out a form to the students and said, you know, will you attend? Will you not attend? And they have gotten all those forms back, and the majority have said they will attend, but they won't be on time. So I don't know when they're going to get there, but they'll be there at some point in the first half.
Can you imagine being the person? It's like the guy that hosts the New Year's party, and it's like 10 o'clock at night, and like nobody's showing up. Like midnight's coming. Like they said they were coming. They said they were coming. So now you could have this. Like kickoff's happening. Where are the students? They said they were coming. We only have a limited amount of students that we were allowed in, but the ones that said they were coming, they're not here. I hope that's not the case. Get there on time, people. Let's go. If you say you're going to go, be there. What is the number anyway? Is it like 500? Is it 1,000?
I've yet to see anything. It says they'll be required to wear masks and there will be no concessions in the stadium, but I still have yet to see a number.
It can't be more than 1,000.
I was gonna say, how many students do they have? Undergrad students do they have?
I think the number is roughly, what, 6,000?
Oh, that was four. Okay, is it six?
Yeah, maybe a little less. I'm not sure.
They could do
even if you counted the
with all
even
of
if
them
you counted the grad students. You couldn't fill the stadium.
No.
Even a quarter full
no.
if every student
if
came.
Everybody went, right.
Yeah.
So I don't think social distancing will be an issue.
No, there'll be some room. You can spread
I think
out.
There'll be room. But yeah, I've yet to see anything on a number.
And I would say, and we'll talk to Coach Mason about this tomorrow, that I admire the gutsiness in which they played with on Saturday, right? Texas A&M was kind of a mess. They made a lot of mistakes, but you got to give Vanderbilt some credit for and I think the number one thing to take out of it was they looked way better coached on both sides of the ball. The changes of the coordinators seem to have made a big difference in terms of just not looking like they were completely overmatched and guys running free all over the place. No clue on offense. I mean, they had a little something to the game plan. Now we'll see if, you know, when the film starts circulating around and people start figuring out what it is they were doing, can they still hold up? Do they have enough talent? But not a bad first impression, for sure.
No. Yeah, whenever if anybody out there bet on Texas A&M, you threw that ticket in the trash pretty early on. You knew that was not going to be a 31-point victory.
Yeah. And you kept waiting for the big play. Like they come out in the second half and get a 58-yard run, Texas A&M, and you're thinking, oh, well, is the dam breaking? And the answer was, heck no. I mean, Vanderbilt just kept bouncing back. You know, they get the ball a couple of times down by five, one particular time where they've got a chance, you know, in scoring territory, and they threw an interception. But, you know, they had opportunities to make that really interesting, like take the lead late kind of interesting.
Right. Is it me or did Mon look pretty pedestrian in that game?
You know,
isn't he supposed to be the big experienced quarterback?
Yeah, he made some plays. You can see the talent, but I think it's fair to say that was pretty disappointing that they didn't get more production there. I don't know if it's all him. You wonder too if it's, you know, just a bad night or how many people didn't practice as much as you wanted. But yeah, there's a lot of questions that I'm sure they're coming out of there with.
Well, that wasn't the worst case I saw over the weekend. Kelly Holcomb took NC State against Virginia Tech and silly underdogs, and you're thinking, that's a really good pick. When we learned that Virginia Tech had like 25 kids out for that game, Virginia Tech rolled them. They had 25 kids out.
I meant to look at this. Something really weird happened there. What happened with that?
I don't know. I didn't see the game.
I didn't either, but I meant to look at that this morning. Even Saturday, I was like, I saw the flash across like something. I thought I saw it where they only had like 25 players. Like, that can't be true. They would have canceled
the game.
No,
I think 25 they had
players
24
out.
25 out. And I was like, whoa. Oh, that's a good pick by Kelly then. And everything I saw in NC State was never – like, Virginia Tech was in control the whole game. I was like, wow, okay. Yeah, it didn't affect Virginia Tech.
Yeah, so Virginia Tech had 23 players out and still won.
Yeah. All right, we'll come back, put a bow on Monday's edition of Darren Donick and Chase. On the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Fangio, Broncos head coach, has confirmed Jarrell Casey out for the season. Torn bicep. Yikes. Not good. The other thing that we're trying to figure out is, and maybe Mark Stoops, and we learned this from the interview with Mick Suss from the Clarion Ledger earlier this hour, that Lane Kiffin had spoken extensively today at his presser about this so-called vote out there, that he said, I don't think this was supposed to be public, but I guess Mark Stoops, maybe he did a little whoops. Maybe he was not supposed to say that. Maybe a football coach that was saying something as presser that I'm sure people behind the scenes were scrambling and going, no, you're not supposed to be telling them that. But there could be a vote from the SEC presidents that could reverse this rule, and that could be good news for Tennessee with Cade Mays. There's a lot of some schools in the conference that would love to see this get reversed right away. So we'll see what happens on that front. But could have news in the next 24 hours on that. We'll see what happens. All right, you want to talk a little bit. I've got the odds of the Major League Baseball playoffs in front of me. And I'm just going to ask you the series, and you tell me who's the favorite, okay?
All right. Because as we've been saying, two out of three is very different than three out of five or four out of seven.
Yeah, that's very true.
Changes the odds in a big way.
Okay. That being said, let's start with my beloved Indians and the Yankees.
Well, the series is in Cleveland, correct? Mm-hmm. So all three games are in Cleveland. Cleveland has got a guy named Shane Bieber who...
It's not sold out, though.
Nobody has touched, right? They've got a pretty... They've got the best ERA, I think, in the game. I think in the AL for sure.
Their arms are not the issue. They've got three guys that play softball leagues in the offseason in the outfield.
Okay. We're talking about the Yankees here, and that probably has something conjured up in your mind of you just think Yankees must be the favorite. I'm going to say the Indians are a slight favorite.
Like your logic, I like your reasoning, I like where you're going with that. But you actually, unlike just like exactly what you did earlier, you let that play out and work against your answer when it was actually working for you. Just like previous conversation. What you were saying is correct. The public will like the Yankees more. So if the public is good, the money from the public is going to be going on the Yankees.
That's what the odds makers will do.
Right. They will put who as the favorite?
Then they would put the Yankees as the
favorite.
Yeah,
there you go. Okay. So you had the right, you had the right mindset. And it was working for your answer, but you gave the wrong answer. So the Yankees are the slight favorite in that series. And you did I just hear you say the wrong team is favored? Did I just hear you say that?
Yeah, I think the Indians have a slightly better shot in a 2 out of 3, but any 2 out of 3 is a toss up to begin with. But I just love the three starting pitchers that the Indians are gonna roll out there.
Okay. Astros, Twins.
Wow. Twins are favored.
You feel good about that. Twins have not, I don't think, won a playoff series since like 91, I don't think.
It's been a long time. They've lost a lot of playoff series, but they're not playing the Yankees.
That's all they're known for.
They're not playing the Yankees, which helps them.
Right?
Yeah, they won a playoff series in, what was it, 03 or 02 maybe? They beat the A's in the division series and then lost in the LCS.
But I think that's one in 30 years, right? I don't even think we're exaggerating.
Right. You're right. But the Astros are not the same. They're not the same. And it's in Minnesota, where Minnesota plays extremely well.
And they have announced there will be no trash cans in the stadium at all.
Well, that...
So you cannot even throw away anything. There won't even be a trash can to be found.
I'm sure that will be talked about, especially now that it's the postseason.
So you're going with the Twins?
I think the Twins are favored, yeah.
Okay. The Twins are favored. Actually, they're a pretty decent favorite in that. Minus 170.
Well, no Verlander is a big one.
Yeah, I mean, let's throw that in there. I mean, they don't have they lose Garrett Cole in the offseason, so that there's a stud gone. And then, oh, by the way, your other stud is Verlander, and he's gone with Tommy John.
Yeah. And Jose Altuve has been hurt a lot. He's not the same as he was. They've got some issues.
Okay. Blue Jays. Yeah. Blue Jays
are
in the playoffs. How in the world?
The Buffalo Blue Jays.
How in the world? Against the Rays.
Rays have to be pretty heavily favored. They just scare me a little bit. Could they have a couple of games where they score one? Yeah, they could. They've got They've got so many guys you don't know much about, but they're really good. They just keep coming at you with pitcher after pitcher. So the Rays should be pretty significantly favored, but they're going to be an interesting one. They've dominated, but what happens in a three-game series?
Rays are a big favorite, minus 210. White Sox A's. White Sox A's.
White Sox slipped down the stretch, coughed up what would have been a much better seed. They really had a handle on the division and then collapsed. We know the A's history of postseason. It's just next to the Twins, right? They lose in the postseason all the time.
Yep.
But the A's are favored for sure.
Barely.
Is that right?
I mean,
pretty close, huh?
Barely. This thing is almost a pick 'em, according to the odds makers. That surprised me a bit. It really did. Okay, quickly over on the National League side. Marlins, Cubs.
Cubs.
Cubs minus 210 like the Rays. Big favorite. Cardinals, Padres.
I would say the Padres should be a pretty heavy favorite.
Also a minus 210 heavy favorite. Brewers, Dodgers.
Dodgers have to be the biggest favorite of any.
They are. Minus 300. And finally, the Reds and Chase's beloved Braves.
Now, this is the real test case, as we were saying for the last couple weeks. If the Reds get in, watch out, because they can hit you with some aces. And the Braves, what do they not have? They don't have aces.
No pitching.
So the Braves will be favored, but how much?
Slight favorite.
Woo.
Bravos, minus 135.
It's on. Ryan Porth and Chase McCabe, mano y mano.
Slight favorite. Bravos. All right.
It's going to be fun. NCAA tournament baseball style, kind of, especially on Wednesday, but starting tomorrow. Eight games on Wednesday. Eight playoff games in one day.
It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. All right. Have a great rest of your rainy, overcast Monday. Be safe out there. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Stay tuned. Chase and the GM. That's next.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.